Welcome to the Irish Tech News Podcast, where we will bring you some of the most interesting interviews and features from the world of tech. Visit irishtechnews.ie and check out our podcast section to explore all of our previous episodes. You can subscribe to our podcast using whatever your favorite app or service is by visiting anchor.fm/irish-tech-news.
Hi, welcome to today's Arctic Podcast. Today in the podcast, we have Nick Butler, CEO of LearnRight. How are you doing, Nick?
Hey, good. Nice to speak to you, Ronan.
Thanks, Nick. Now, before we start, just a bit of background so know who you are, because you've got an interesting journey and story to tell us.
Yeah, definitely. So currently, I'm the owner of LearnRight. It's a startup in the e-learning space. Previous to that, or even still at the moment, I'm working in a web agency that I set up back in 2013. And that was actually an interesting story, how I got into the web design company in the first place. So originally, I went to WIT, studied commercial computing there, and then a computer science degree. And then after WIT, which is now called SETU, the Southeast Technical University, I traveled to Australia and I did the whole, you know, travel around backpacking thing for a couple of years and had lots of fun. And at the end of my 2 years, I had a good job based in Melbourne, and my family were missing me. They wanted me back in Ireland. My mum had set up a business and I was big into surfing at the time. So she had a surf shop in County Waterford in Tremore, which, you know, some of your listeners might be familiar with. And she asked me to come home and look after and run the business. So I headed back to Ireland, which was quite exciting. And of course, we were in the middle of the recession, so that was probably a risky thing to do. And as the years kind of rolled on, business got a little bit harder. The business survived the recession, which was great. But at one point, we realized that my salary was something that the company could no longer afford.
Yeah.
So I had to think about doing something else. So I got into website design at that stage to generate kind of an additional income source. And then I decided to go out on my own away from the family business and just focus on the tech space. Once I did that, the issue the opportunity that first presented itself was to set up a booking engine software. So I was looking at my mom's business, the surf shop. She had a surf school. We used to do surf lessons and the ability to take online bookings for that. So I kind of got around to kind of setting up and scoping out the idea of building a booking engine. It was something I was going to build myself. And I realized I didn't really have the funds to get that off the ground, which is something I come across in the web agency all the time with startups, where there's great ideas, people want to do stuff, but the money's just not there to make it happen. But what was working at the time was websites. So I was generating income from that. I was diverting the money into the software startup. And at one stage, I realized, hang on, there's plenty of money here in the website design business to maybe just make this my thing.
Yeah.
Back in 2013, I registered the company. I started to hire staff and we started to grow. So yeah, that was 11 years ago now, which is, you know, doesn't feel like that when you're busy and you're working, you know?
Yeah, and what's the company called? What was your company called, the web design company?
So the web design company is called Ireland Website Design.
Yeah.
Started out initially just doing projects for, small businesses, startups, that kind of thing. And as we got some experience and some clients under our belt, we started going for bigger and better projects. So at this stage, I can't really say the websites, you know, you could probably see some of them on our own portfolio if you check this out. I'm learning websitedesign.com, but some of our clients I won't mention here, but you would, to suffice to say that anybody that's listening to this podcast would have been on websites that we've developed over the years. And most of our projects, I'd say 90% of them were based here in Ireland. That's the web design business.
And then since then, you kind of pivoted again, because you pivoted into doing stuff with e-commerce as well.
That's right. Yeah. So one thing that I learned about business, and I got into like a period where I was reading a lot of business books. And, you know, one thing that I came across was, you know, you pick one thing and do that one thing well, and you do it for one industry. And it makes life a lot easier. So we looked at e-commerce because, again, going back to my family business and some of the clients I was working with at the time, they were in the e-commerce space. They were retailers. And so I thought, actually, you know what? E-commerce would be a good space to get into. A big issue in the web design business is it's by its nature, it's all project-based. So when there's projects, there's lots of projects, revenue is good and business is going well. But then just there's natural ebbs and flows when you run a business like that. And, you know, if you have a few months where there's not many projects coming in the door, things can be kind of tricky in that business. So to try kind of flatten the curve on revenue and to try make the business a bit more predictable, we started to move into the marketing side of e-commerce. So that was a really good move because what we have found in the web industry is you have alternatives now like Wix and Shopify that you can set up your own websites. But we wanted to get bigger projects. We wanted that recurring revenue, which was marketing. So we realized in the e-com space with our clients, it was all about growing their revenue, increasing their sales, improving customer retention, increasing average order values, that type of thing. Yeah. So we got very much into that marketing and started getting results for our clients, which led to more introductions with more retailers and allowed that business to grow. Around the same time that we decided to get into e-commerce, or maybe slightly before that, we were after doing a few e-learning projects for clients. And we had one client, I can't mention their name, but they would be an international NGO that had a large membership base. And they were using Moodle at the time for their learning management system. And Moodle, open source platform, a lot of universities and stuff use it. It's well known in the space. It's like the WordPress of the LMS space. Oh, sorry, just your listeners, in case they don't know, LMS stands for Learning Management System.
Yeah.
So we went in, we had a look at this Moodle, and they had all these extensions connected to it, and it was out of date, it was buggy. They were having problems upgrading it. They had a huge amount of data in the system with all of their members registered in it and their organizations that they were involved in and all of their courses and content. And they were open to upgrading Moodle to something a bit better. And so at the time I was like, you guys are struggling with the hassle now of Moodle and supporting it yourselves. Because you download Moodle, you install it on your own server, and now you're responsible for managing or maintaining that. And so the client was having a lot of tech issues and headaches.
Yeah.
So I said, why don't we look at the SaaS direction? SaaS means software as a service. So whereby the difference between Moodle and a SaaS offering in the LMS space is something that's in the cloud. You're not responsible for the maintenance or the software updates, for the security of it or anything like that. You just pay a monthly fee to a supplier and you've got your learning platform. So we did go and have a bit of an exploration with that client, and we did some calls with SaaS suppliers at the time. And we found a couple of products that we liked, but when we would sit down with the client and we'd look through that product in a bit more detail with it, the client kept poking problems in it. And so we very quickly realized that there wasn't a good enough SaaS LMS out there that ticked all the boxes. So we started to talk to the client about maybe having to give up on some of their ideas or some of the things that they wanted. And that wasn't an option for the client. So instead, we offered to actually build them a custom LMS for themselves, their own platform. And it was something the client was interested in and had the budget for. And being a large international NGO, they surprised me by having a bigger budget to be able to do something like that. So it was really exciting. We kind of got our fingers stuck into something that we had a little bit of experience in. And we built out the platform, and the client's very happy with it, worked quite well for them. We work with that client ongoing now to maintain that software and keep it running. But at one stage, we would have had some great ideas for that LMS, or we would have seen things that we did in a particular way because we were more led by the client than, say, our own research or our own knowledge. And so the platform was built in a particular way. And looking back at it, we realized, hang on, if we got to do this platform again, there's a whole heap of things we would do completely differently. There's other ideas and things that we would put in and features we'd like to see in a platform, really to make it the best platform that's out there in the SaaS space. So we decided in 2019, we were going to build our own platform that we would build as a SaaS, and we would launch it and sell it ourselves. And the web agency was running alongside that at the time. We were still building e-commerce websites. And then, of course, the big one hit in 2020 in March,
yeah.
Which I don't even need to mention the name of what that was because we all know. But yeah, so e-commerce absolutely boomed at that stage. Every retailer that didn't have a website or an online store suddenly needed one. We had more clients and more projects come in the door than we could possibly handle. So we had to, unfortunately, pause development on the learning management system so we could take in all of this other work. The projects were bigger. There was a lot of e-commerce work to do. And of course, we sold a lot of marketing and stuff as well to help retailers promote themselves at that time. So agency was flat out. And would you believe in late 21, early 22, we were still wrapping up some of those COVID projects. So it was a bit of it was definitely a big hit in our business. But we are hit in a good way. Our revenue went through the roof. We did really well. But now, I think in 21, we were kind of like, right, now's the time to get back into this learning management system. So we hired more staff for it. We spun out the learning management as a separate entity altogether. We registered the name learnright.com, and we set up a website under that, and we started to build out the software. The software took a lot longer, Ronan, to build than we expected. Yeah. Because you start off and you're trying to do speed, right? And you're trying to build stuff.
Yeah.
But then later you go, wait, we should have done that way better. So we went back and we refactored a lot of the software. Then as we started to get input from potential clients and had people look at it and take their feedback, we realized, wait, there was other things that we should do or different ways we should do stuff. And so in 23, we managed to get, we managed to get it up and running and working, and we even got a few clients on board onto the system, and so they've been using it. We've been getting lots of feedback. We've been kind of revising, tweaking, fixing it, ironing out any bugs and problems. Yeah. With it, and now it's up and running, but we haven't actually officially launched the product or actually really got out there and told people about it. And that's why I guess I'm talking to you today, was really just to get the news out there that there's this startup. It's a learning management system. And we're, our biggest market, or who we're kind of targeting, is like the corporate sector. So yeah. HR departments, talent development managers, that sort of stuff. In big companies with at least 500 staff in them, which seemed a little bit aspirational, but it seems like, I think we're getting a little bit of traction already in that space now.
Well, earlier you mentioned Moodle. Now, years ago, I was in working for a company that I had to set up a Moodle site for us and use it. And I did it, but it was always updating it. I didn't like doing it. And then a few years later, I ended up going back to college to upskill. And my college material was all done in Moodle. So I've seen on both ends, as a person developing a Moodle site and as a user using Moodle. And it can be a pain in the ass. And if what you're doing makes giving your podcast easy to use and much simpler, well done.
Yeah, thanks. Yeah, so I think Moodle was definitely, back in 2017, was something we had to look at a lot because our client was coming off that platform.
Yeah.
So I feel like we really got the best out of that software in our system. But we've definitely made the thing a lot easier, a lot faster, a lot smoother, a lot less clunkier. And I think the big headache for people that use Moodle is that self-hosting and maintenance piece, which, we've taken care of.
Yeah.
I mean, any university in the country that's using Moodle must have tech people on staff around the clock that are there to kind of support that software and keep it going. So yeah, we removed that headache for them. So
in a way, to me, you're a bit like a Salesforce in that you're offering a product, but also I guarantee in the future you'll have different plugins according to what the client needs. So if a client wants X, Y, and Z, you can give them that. If they want X and Y, you give them that, like Salesforce, for example.
Yeah, actually, so that's a great point. So we're building our platform in a very modular way. And the reason we're doing it in that way is that you can switch on and off features that you want. In the platform, because what we noticed in the LMS space and the kind of inquiries that we've dealt with to date. So we haven't had a ton, but we have gotten leads already, and just through the web agency, we've had inquiries and stuff. So what we're finding is that everybody's needs are very different. So even, you know, on the face of it, two organizations might look the same, but they want to do things differently. So we needed to build our software in a very modular way where you can switch off and on modular. So we would have a module, let's say, for the people directory. So you can have kind of like almost like a LinkedIn style community platform where people can have a profile, connect with each other, message each other, that sort of stuff. They can live in groups and join groups together. But not everybody wants that. Some organizations want a learning platform where I don't know who the other users that are in my platform are. I'm just in there doing my one course or my one thing. So yeah, that was something from the get-go that we wanted to do. And I think it's something that makes our system quite unique. I'm better than some of the other platforms that are out there.
I remember when I was using Moodle. Moodle was a standard thing you had, and you couldn't pick and choose what you could do with it. Whereas with your products, you can do that, which makes it more usable.
Totally. Yeah, and the other thing, just in terms of the startup as well. So I just wanted to talk about, and might be of interest to some listeners, if they're interested in starting up a new business or spinning out, just a little bit behind how we've done that. So obviously, I have the benefit that we started the web design company, and that was very much on a shoestring. But obviously, when we came through things like COVID and stuff, you know, the business has done well. So we've reinvested a lot of our revenue into building out this new product, which, you know, we're lucky to be able to do that. And I guess a lot of, you know, startup businesses are not able to do that. But yet we do have finite resources. We don't have an unlimited supply of money to put into the software. So in some ways, we've had to be careful. We have looked at investment, but one place that really helped in a big way, and I was kind of surprised and not surprised at the same time, but it was the local enterprise office. So back when I was starting out the original business first, and we were looking at building a software, we contacted the local enterprise office, and I think we even put in a funding application that got rejected at the time. So I kind of never really thought about going back to the local enterprise office. But I decided, I was talking to another business owner who was after getting some funding from them, and he said, look, why don't you go talk to them? And at that stage as well, I kind of less about funding for me and a little bit more about the mentoring anyway. I was very interested in talking to and having some business mentors that maybe were coming from the software space as well that could maybe give me some advice and guidance on the business and getting it off the ground. So I engaged with a local enterprise office. And they assigned, we've been three or four mentors that we've worked with now through our local enterprise office. And then we finally put in a grant application, and we didn't have high hopes for that. But we put it in, and I'm not sure if I'm allowed to mention how much money we got, but it was a sizable amount of an investment. Like, it was less than six figures, but it was kind of close to that number. I think a big part of that was we were looking to hire people straight away into the business as well. And I think that helped us with that grant aid that was there. We then actually attended a startup event or an awards ceremony. And we actually got, I think it was the best software startup for Waterford for last year, which was really exciting to actually get. But the local enterprise office was great. I have considered raising investment, so bringing maybe private investors into the business. And I've had some preliminary conversations with some investors that I would know through the existing business. And we didn't get to a point where, you know, they were offering X amount for, you know, Y percent of the business or whatever. But what I ultimately came to the conclusion with was that at the time, and I suppose that we're still kind of in this space right now, whereby we have a product, the product's developed, so we have it, and we've got a good website. Obviously, being a web agency, we could set something up that was very good, but we don't have an awful lot of customers right now. And so for an investor, they want something, they want to have something that's de-risked as much as possible. for you as the business owner, the CEO of the company, to get the best deal on investment.
Yeah.
So what I wanted to do, and I'm making good headway on it, is figuring out the marketing piece now, getting the leads in and start getting some sales into the business. Because what I want to go back to a potential investor is say, right, we've got a product fully developed. We've got our website and our marketing going. We've got a marketing engine that's delivering for a certain cost, so many leads per week or per month. And we've already managed to sign up X number of clients. So I think that gives a much better proposition if and when we're looking for investment. I think in this space that we're moving into, all of the LMS platforms that are out there that are SaaS-based and stuff, they've all had to raise investment.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, a big part of that raising investment for us is going to be the marketing piece, is to generate that engine that will drive us leads to the business.
Also recommend HBAN as well, for angel investors. They have a conference every year. And those guys are more willing to invest in these kind of businesses because they won't give you like a million, but they'll give you enough money to give you a leg up. And what they'll do as well is they're more inclined to invest in things like this because they love doing this and they know that what they're doing is a risk, but money putting in isn't a big risk to them, if you know what I mean.
Yes, yeah, for sure. And I did speak to our local HBAN.
Yeah.
And I had a couple of friends that I would know through the web design business that I didn't realize were big into investing through the angel network.
Yeah.
But I actually met with them and had coffee and had a chat and stuff. And they were really good to explain the process and how that worked. And I'm also talking about the tax incentives that are there for angel investors and stuff and why it makes it so appealing. But it definitely sounds really good. I think the piece that when you get investment and it's one, I already know who my investors are going to be, at least the initial private investment that will come in.
Yeah.
And what I liked about them was when I sat down and we discussed it, it was more, right, we can give you the money, that's fine, Nick. But there's the support that we can provide you. There's the, you know, 10 o'clock at night and you're stressing about something, you know, you can pick up the phone and we can have a chat and we can help you figure something out, you know, or tell you what to do or bring that kind of experience. So I'm 38.
Yeah.
I've been in business now for off my own steam, we could say, let's say 12 or 13 years. But I'm still learning, like most business people
yeah.
are. But you find people that have been here, you know, they've launched 5 or 6 startups over the last 40 years, that have a lot of knowledge and that have a good network and that have run into all those business problems that I'm not even seeing right now. That we're going to run into with our new business.
Yeah, to me, it's like basically if you go on the TV show Dragon's Den and you're looking for investment, ideally you also want somebody at a Dragon who's got the experience at 10 o'clock at night, give them a call, I've got a problem with this. I can give you 100 grand, no problem investing, but you want more than the money. You want their contact book. You want how to work with the other clients, how they can help you pivot through a crisis. And that's what you're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And I think the other thing, and I realized this last year when I was talking to private investors that were interested in coming on board, was that if they gave me 100 or 200 or 500,000 euros, I realized how quickly I would spend that money.
Yeah.
Because you would get it. So you kind of got to spend it. So you can, if it's to go to marketing, we'd put it into marketing. But it's interesting how more careful you are with spending money when it's your own money that you're spending. So right now, the marketing that I'm doing, I'm spending my own money. And when something's not working in the marketing space for this business, I'm going, right, I've already dropped 10,000 euros in here. Will I continue to drop money into what I'm doing right now? And it's like, no, let's pull back on that. Let's try another strategy. So we're not officially launched as a business yet, really, I would say, but we're doing some tentative marketing and trying to test the market and see what works and what doesn't. Something that we did try was we joined it's a website called LMS.org.
Yeah.
So they're like a directory for LMS systems, and they let you pitch different systems against each other, do comparisons and that sort of thing. And I kind of thought, you know what, these types of websites, they're 100 a penny, but I had a feeling about this one particular site, and I just thought, you know what? So I reached out to the guy that had it. And it was serious money to get listed on it. It was like 25,000 euros or something like that. I had a chat with him. I said, look, I'm a startup. We're pre-revenue. We don't have investment behind us. Software owns Steam, and kind of told him a bit about my story. And he was like, you know what, Nick, I like you. You're kind of like the underdog coming into the market with some, with a product that seems to be quite good. He goes, we want to come on board and help you. So he gave me a hugely reduced price to get me off the site. And then they checked out our product, and then they gave us a little badge that said best new LMS of 2023, which we were really proud to get. But that has actually generated us some leads. And not only has it generated us leads, but it's generated us leads from some really interesting places. So we have a well-known space agency that got in touch looking for a learning management system. And if that comes to fruition, that could be absolutely huge for an Irish business to put that brand name associated with itself. So I really feel like, you know, that this product and this new business could be on the cusp of something big, you know?
Yeah, and also you're also using AI in your product as well, which is very interesting.
Yeah, so there's a load of stuff. So there's a load of stuff we can do with AI in a learning management system. And one thing that I'm finding is that the existing businesses that are in the LMS SaaS space are very slow to adopt and bring AI into their platform to the level that we've already been able to do. And I think that's because, you know, they're working with an existing architecture, which is probably quite large and has a huge load of data in it and lots of users in it already and stuff. So when they make changes to their platform, it's a little bit more difficult. But in our platform, we've done a number of things already with AI. So one thing we've done is personalized learning paths. So it's kind of like we can learn the type of courses or types of content that the user is engaging with. And then we can actually customize the content in the platform around what we think they're interested in. So if you're doing a lot of, if you're in the platform, you're doing a lot of tech courses, we can show you more tech courses. And the other thing is for the instructors building out courses, as they're starting to like type in something, we're going, wait, we think we know what you're saying. Let us finish this for you. And so we can almost populate the entire course content. Obviously, you gotta make it your own, but it takes the time out of it. And so there's other stuff that we're looking at doing with AI in our platform, things like predictive analytics, so predicting trends and learner outcomes, kind of using AI to help educators and instructors to intervene proactively, offering additional support to users when needed, and with the whole goal of improving learning outcomes. The other thing that I think is quite interesting, and it's quite big in the news right now, is you see all these people walking around with their Apple Vision Pros, that will augmented reality system that's out there. So I'm quite interested in how that might merge with e-learning and SaaS products. So effectively, if any of your listeners haven't already tried out Apple's new product, I haven't tried it out myself yet, but I read a lot about it. But it's very much just putting web pages in front of you on your screen. But we can bring, so that means automatically something like our LMS can be used in augmented reality. But it might in fact change the kind of the way LMSs are used. So it's going to be a lot more maybe about people touching with their hands. Screen. It might be a little bit more immersive. We might be looking to bring in some VR stuff into it. So you can, as it stands, you can upload a VR video into our LMS. But I can see that stuff becoming bigger. I also wonder about things like Internet of Things and how that might over time integrate with e-learning. So I think I think e-learning is a really exciting space right now with all of the new emerging technologies and how that can be brought into platforms like what we have and how users might interact with these products in the future.
Yeah, well, last year I did a podcast with a new startup that are basically going to have the educational stuff done via the metaverse. So what I'll do is I'll have a masterclass with maybe a famous film director, and you can all come into this little metaverse room and everything and watch and have the person speaking live. Bit like a modern day Second Life, and their view was that they were banking on the Apple Vision Pro is going to be part of their future. They think that's going to be a game changer for them and how to do things.
Yeah, possibly. I'm an early adopter of VR myself, so I've had the various Oculus and things like that over the years, and a current one I'm using is the Oculus Rift S, I think it is. So it's a few years old now at this stage. But I love putting it on and spend a couple of hours in VR and enjoying it. But I kind of have to say, you know, being tethered to the PC, which I know was solved by the Quest, but obviously the Quest isn't as good in terms of the quality of stuff that you get on it, because it's not tethered to a computer. But being tethered and then the weight of the device in your head, I find it can be quite tiring to use. So I'm spent after a few hours in VR. So I'm really excited by Apple's new, I believe it's called the Apple Vision.
Vision Pro. Like.
It's Vision Pro, So I'm quite excited by that product because I can see it possibly solving the issues that I have with the Rift when I'm using it. And the only thing, and I know we've already talked about this outside of the podcast, Rona, but you're definitely a big Mac guy, but I'm over here with my Samsung Android phone with my Microsoft PC, so I'm waiting for the Samsung or Microsoft equivalent of the Vision Pro to come along before I take that dive into AR.
Well, I used years ago, I was lucky enough to try out HoloLens on Microsoft. Great product, but they never took it to market properly. They just decided to drop it, which I thought was a shame. And then last week, I saw a great review of Vision Pro by Stephen Fry. Stephen Fry is a big Apple fan, and he did a big review on a website, an app called Substack, which is great to get all these people giving you their, it's like an online diary system. Bit like a Medium, but a bit better. But he gave a review and he said it's great because in the past with your devices, you mentioned before, Vision Pro, you mentioned the other ones like Oculus Rift and Quest, they've been big and bulky because the battery pack is in the head of the device, which is heavier. In the Apple device, the battery pack is down by your side. Bit like if you got a catheter and you've got an illness, you have to go carry around with you. But as it's the first version of that, it's got about 2.5 hour battery life. But in the future, when we get to version 5, like compare the first iPhone to the iPhone we've got now, so different. And in 5 or 6 years' time, the iterations we'll have of this Vision Pro will be so much different. And the price will come down as economy scale come into place, we'll build it, and you get other guys like Samsung will come along, and as they did with their Galaxy phones, they made an alternative to the iPhone, and you'll get Samsung doing the alternative to this as well, and it's going to be good.
Yeah, I think so, and even the products get lighter, smaller, and the other thing I think, and I found that with VR, was that, you know, there's so much potential with VR, but yet, you know, the content is slightly lagging behind in a way, and the apps and the stuff isn't there for it yet, so I think give it a few years and we'll see more uses of things like HoloLens and the Vision Pro.
Yeah, well, I think what Apple did, Apple were smart. When Apple brought out their product, they realized they caused brisket being. They realized we wouldn't have a scenario where you can walk down the street, wear the glass, like the Facebook glasses, walk down the street and you can see something, and maybe you're walking by a restaurant and suddenly up comes the menu or a QR code. You can click on that and then the menu appears. That kind of stuff. So in other words, it's a mixture of VR and AR put together. And that's what they're trying to do. And before that, you didn't really get that. You got a scenario where it didn't fully work properly, or you have a scenario that has to be VR only. It can't be mixed with augmented reality. And Apple realized, augmented reality is the way to go, but it's got to have a bit of VR. And they realized when they didn't go into the metaverse space, I knew Metaverse wasn't going to be what it was claimed to be, because if Apple don't get involved in technology, or maybe Samsung as well, you know it's not going to last, or it's not going to be as big as it could be. And like a good example is when Apple were doing their recent smartphones, they didn't actually bring 5G into the phones till they knew the 5G was widely spread, because they're thinking, why are we going to put 5G in our phones when this network isn't there for 5G?
Mm-hmm.
And you'll get other guys doing that. Like right now, for example, in China, 6G is now in the market in China. Now, it'll be a while before it comes here, but nobody's going to release in the Western world, they're going to release a 6G phone because 6G network isn't there for you. And with certain technologies, like what you're trying to do with the AR and VR, people got to realize that how you deal with it is got to be, people got to be able to use it and don't feel lost, and use technology that works. And what Apple are doing, other guys will do, We'll make it work. They'll find the flaws and fix it.
Yeah, definitely. And I don't know if you saw it the other day, but somebody hacked the Apple Vision Pro to work with their Tesla car.
Yeah.
So they had Vision Pro on while they were driving around.
I saw that, yeah.
I'm pretty scared by things like that. You know, I just, there's, yeah. And we're seeing people on trains and things like that with their Vision Pro on, and they're kind of in their own little universe. So hopefully it doesn't lead to things like people having car accidents while they're driving around with their Vision Pro.
I saw a guy with a scooter doing that as well. And he's got the glasses on, and I'm thinking, it's like basically, if I see somebody cycling and they got headphones on and listen to music or radio with headphones, and you're cycling, don't do that because it's dangerous.
Yeah. But anything that's then blocking your vision is just crazy. And also the price of those devices to be going around on an electric scooter. I've got an electric bike and I had my phone on it and the bike fell over, destroyed my phone, you know? So I was upset. I could only imagine how upset I'd be if that was my Apple Vision Pro that smashed on the ground.
Well, at the moment, they're actually all sold out. The current batch is sold out. And I heard rumors they're going to bring out an SE, smaller version, which are less featured, but will be cheaper. We don't know when that'll be. And we don't know when it'll be available in Ireland, for example. But I guarantee in a couple of years, what you guys do, and you'll be ready for that. When it finally launches in Ireland or launches here, your technology will be ready for that.
Okay, and I'm just reading here that I didn't know this, but it does look like Samsung is bringing out a competitor. It's called a Galaxy Glass headset. Yeah. So supposedly going to arrive early this year, but probably not to Ireland. But yeah, so that would be quite interesting. I definitely can't wait to get onto that AR journey and just get to play with that new tech. Isn't that what we're into, us tech people?
Well,
new technology, we just love it. We put it on, we get a bit like disappointed by all of the things it could do that it doesn't currently, but then we get very excited about the future potential.
Yeah, for technology. Well, at the moment, the technology that's popular and is everyone's lips, it's the moment is AI. In a couple years' time, it'll be AR, VR, because what Samsung and Apple are doing, we'll bring it to the masses and bring the price down.
Mm.
And then you'll have that. Because I know, for example, that years ago, certain products were only available, maybe milk free, or only available in certain places, certain university colleges. And then when someone like Samsung and Apple bring that to the masses, they adopt it, and then it becomes standard. Like AI is now, like 10 years ago, AI was there, but it wasn't as complex as it is now. And it'll be like that in 10 years' time. AR and VR will be standard in everything we're doing.
Mm. And just on the AI thing, I recently was talking to a friend of mine in the tech space too, and he was telling me how apparently some of the big players, I don't know, Musk, Zuckerberg, people like that, have a bit of a bet going on right now, which is what year the first billion-dollar company will exist that is purely run by AI and one founder. So the idea that you can set up, you know, a whole AI system, and you can have, you know, you can have your AI marketer, your AI operations person, your AI salesperson, and then they work all together as a team to develop a product, launch a product, market a product, sell a product, and interact with humans. And all of a sudden you've got this one person behind that that's made $1 billion or more out of a company. So it's just absolutely crazy what the future is bringing. But I think I think right now is a really exciting time to be in tech. It probably feels like the days when personal computers were first coming out, or I feel like you know that feeling you got the first time you connected to the internet and you heard that dial-up modem and your brain just went, I can think of 1,000 things we're going to be able to do 10 years from now.
Well, I remember when I was about 9 or 10 years of age, and 10 years, I got my first computer. Well, family did. We got a Commodore 20, 8K memory. Say that it was the first color on computer, and we got it in Pizza Parnell Street, but sadly gone. But we got it from there. And at that time, it was cutting edge. And it was back in 1980. And it was great. I learned to program on that and use it. And it was a great, great, great little computer. And I remember I used that very well. And at that time, that was cutting edge. And then you can buy, if I record in floppy disk drive, you can get a modem as well to go into bulletin board support. I didn't have that. Because a lot of my youth, I lived abroad, so we didn't get to do that. And then when, about 6 years later, we were looking to replace our computer. So we were looking at cutting edge. So we thought there was still a Commodore, which they had a thing called Amiga. Or do we go, we were looking at also the Apple Mac. But the Mac was only black and white at that point, the screen, and the Mac was expensive. We could afford it, but just black and white, we thought, no, we won't color screen. So we ended up between a Commodore Amiga and Atari ST. The Atari ST, we chose because the Commodore Amiga had a bulky power pack, which was also with the Commodore VIC-20. It was a bulky power pack you plugged in, drag along. It's a bit like basically the plug you have for a laptop. You know, it's bulky enough.
Yeah, I remember it. I had Amiga, actually, so that was...
Yeah, and then we got the Atari ST. It was the first home computer with 1 meg of memory, and also it had a MIDI port as well. So it was cutting edge. And the software they used was basically Digital Jam, and it looked like a Mac GUI. So the computer was called Jackintosh because the owner of Atari that was Jack Tramiel. He was the founder of Commodore, who left Commodore and bought Atari. Oh. So they called the OS Jackintosh as a pun on Macintosh, and it was great. I've still got it. Stuck at that. I stuck at the VIC-20. And I remember you said they're getting technology early. It's going to be amazing. Then when I went on the internet, that was amazing. You get to see these things I couldn't see before. And right now, with new technology, you're going to have every so often something new is going to come out and you're going to go get that buzz again. Oh, wow, I can't wait to use it. And then suddenly, when you're using it, it becomes standard. And then you think, what's going to be the next big thing we're going to be buzzing about? But technology will always, like Moore's Law, every 18 months it will change.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, for sure. So the Christmas time just gone, I got myself a Steam Deck. So yeah. I've been out a while, but just to take those PC games into a handheld machine was just the game changer. And I held off on getting one for so long because I thought you couldn't play a PC game on a handheld and have the same experience. And so I got it as a gift because I put it down on my kind of, I wouldn't buy it myself, but if somebody wanted to buy it for me, I'd have a list. And I got it. And the games on it are brilliant. It's good fun. So you're right. It is just, everything is just changing. So, but I felt like a kid again. I felt like the first time I got my hands on that Amiga 500 I had and loading up my first game into it Christmas morning about 30 years ago.
Yeah, I remember that feeling very well.
So definitely very excited about technology in the future.
So on that note, I'll say, Alan, thanks for a great conversation. And before we finish off, I just want to say one thing before we finish off, Nick. When are you going to be launching your product? When are you going to be fully launching your product?
I suppose official launch, we were aiming for the end of February, but I'm pushing back that now to middle of March because I've been a little bit behind on pushing out the product. One issue that I've got right now is I'm juggling the existing web agency business with the learning business. And I suppose the problem is the web agency is profitable, it's successful, it's working well. So it often ends up having to take priority over the new business.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to get the news out there, get a bit of a drum, a bit of a press release, kind of get it out to, and especially in Ireland, we're now it is something that's built in Ireland, and it's something that I think could grow and could be quite big, and could be, you know, 10 years from now could be another successful tech story that comes out of Ireland, like Teamwork or businesses like that that have set up and have been successful on an international scale.
Right, so that note, so thanks very much, Nick, and have a great day.
Thanks, Ronan, for having me. Appreciate it.
Thanks.
Just Irish Tech News Podcast. Check back every day for the latest episode. You can follow us on Twitter @Irish_Tech News, on Facebook, facebook.com/Irish Tech News, on LinkedIn, linkedin.com/company/Irish-Tech-News, on Instagram, instagram.com/IrishTechNews.ie, and on TikTok, tiktok.com/@IrishTechNews.